Welcome back to another Nerdcast interview. This is Cripple J, and this week I talked with Daniel Schoptow. He's a Cardinal writer. He writes at the Cardinal Conclave. He created the United Cardinal blogger, and he is also a podcaster at the Meet Me at Musial podcast. We talked a little bit of Cardinals. This is the first part of two, and the second one we talk about Star Wars. Yeah.
Okay. Well, at least the phone works.
All right.
I don't know why my headset doesn't. I'm going to have to look into that. But, all right. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you been?
I think I've been all right. You've gotten recovered from everything, back to work and all that?
Back to work, but I start physical therapy on Thursday.
That's going to be probably not much fun.
Yeah. I've already done one round of it before the surgery, so I at least know what I'm getting into.
Yeah, but that's going to be pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, okay, what do I need to know?
We'll just get right into it.
Okay.
So, what are your thoughts of the St. Louis Cardinals as of this minute?
Well, they tend to change depending on the minute. I guess since they're still tied right now, they're not just terribly bad thoughts. It's just been such a frustrating year all the way around. It's like, you know, we've talked about wanting offense for so long, and it's like they decided, okay, we'll give you offense, but nothing else. No good pitching, nothing to do with it. Every time you start to think that this team's going to do something, then they go out and lose games to, like, the Brewers. Or games last night where they don't even bother putting up a hit until the ninth inning. It's just a lot of frustration, and it's hard to say that this team is a team that you get them into the playoffs and they're going to do something. I mean, they can. I mean, they have the possibilities, but the more and more you see of them, the less it seems likely that they're going to be able to put something together and win, you know, even a 3 out of 5 short series without some sort of, you know, some sort of fluke to help them out.
Yeah, and when you look at the pitching, I mean, it was supposed to be the strong point coming into the season, and Jaime Garcia can't even get down to 2 innings tonight.
Yeah, Garcia is just, you know, it's partly, you know, we'll kind of talk about it on Twitter some tonight, partly maybe he's hitting a wall. He's pitched longer in a season than he ever has before, or at least for the last 4 or 5 years. But, you know, you just can't afford that this time of year. It's one thing if you're in Chicago's position and you're, you know, 15 games up and you're just, you know, just kind of playing out the string. You can worry about him, try to give some innings and let him get healthy. Let him get, or not healthy, but you're right. And maybe it is a health issue. We don't know. You can't afford that tonight. And it was kind of interesting to see Mike Matheny go and recognize that so early, pulling him in the second. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about, well, Garcia won't be back in the rotation, or he's not going to. I don't know that there's any other option. We've seen out tonight Alex Reyes, who's got amazing stuff. You know, he's walked, what, 5, 6 guys already today, and he's only pitched, like, 3 innings. You know, that helps when you don't give up any hits around him, but sooner or later those hits are going to come. I'm not sure that Reyes is quite ready for that rotation spot yet. On a full-time basis, and I don't know what else you do with Jaime Garcia. I don't think you sit him for 3 weeks, and I don't think he's good coming out of the bullpen. So, you know, what do you do there? I think you pretty much are stuck with him in the rotation, unless Matheny's a lot more creative than I typically give him credit for.
Yeah, and when you're also having Leak that's struggling as bad as he is, it's going to make it even harder to kind of hide a bad guy in the rotation right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Leak is kind of still feel like maybe you can get something out of him. I mean, if the defense is working and he didn't pitch terribly bad last night. I mean, you know, one run was all that pretty much that the Chicago needed. But, you know, he gave up, I think, 4 runs, 3 earned, and 6 innings, and that's about what you expect out of him. And that's a game that a lot of times this year the Cardinals win because their offense is clicking. But for whatever reason, it seems like this has happened over the past few years too. And, you know, the Cardinals were having that, you know, run of great hitting and runners in scoring position close to the end of the year, and then the playoffs, it started to fade out. I feel like some of that great pitching from last year kind of faded out in September and October too. And now the offense has been carrying the team all year long, seems to be fading a little bit in September as well. Maybe that's because Brandon Moss has been struggling to get a hit, and that really has thrown off things. I don't know. Maybe it's been the absence of Alamedes Diaz, who we saw come back tonight with that big home run. Maybe it is a lot more looking for the long ball than just looking to put the ball in play. I don't know, but it feels like, you know, the Cardinals have scored over 6 runs just twice this month, both against Pittsburgh. It feels like they're just kind of sputtering at times. I mean, you go in there and, you know, 2 games in a row against the Brewers, you don't score a run until the 8th inning. That just shouldn't happen to a team that's trying to be in the playoff race.
Yeah, and one of the things with this team, it seems like it's been a few years now too, that nothing clicks at the same time. You'll have awesome pitching for a week, and then all of a sudden the bats come alive, but your pitchers don't get out of 5 innings.
You're right. I mean, it definitely feels like that. It feels like if they could ever put everything together, they would just be almost unstoppable. And you saw that last year. I mean, the pitching staff, you know, the Cardinals won 100 games last year, and they did it without everything clicking. So they can be good even when some things aren't working. But this year, for whether the talent level's a little bit less, whether it's just a whole bunch of factors working into it, they've not had that margin of error, and they've got to have, you know, to have any chance in October, everything has to go their way. Which you didn't have to say that necessarily last year. Last year, they just needed the good pitching to work and get a little bit of runs. This year, you're going to have everything.
Yeah. So what have your thoughts been of Luke Weaver in the rotation then?
I like Luke Weaver. I think Weaver, as we've seen, probably earned his spot in the rotation more than Reyes did, just because he does have that command. He does have... You know, on some of my shows, I think especially with John Nagel, we made the comparison early on that Luke Weaver was the Stephen Piscotty of the pitching rotation, and Alex Reyes was going to be the Oscar Tabarez. You know, one's a huge star with huge talent and a possibility of being, you know, one of the best in baseball, and the other is going to be a solid, consistent guy that's going to be very good for this team. And, I think that's what Luke Weaver's going to be. We've seen him, you know, hang into pretty much every game. He's only had about one really bad start, and that's not even that bad, especially compared to some of the starts we've seen out of, well, pretty much everybody in the rotation. You know, he does have things to work on. He's still not going as deep as they probably would like him to, but I'm not saying that Weaver's going to be in the rotation to start the year next year, but for right now, I mean, if you were putting together a playoff rotation, there's a strong possibility that Luke Weaver would be in it, even if you're only looking at 3 pitchers.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, are you confident with him in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, as much as anybody else. I mean, there is going to be that hesitation because it is a bigger stage. And so far, he hasn't seemed to have any problems with the big stage, if you will. But, you know, that's the playoffs. That's when everything's riding on it, especially maybe in a Game 3, a Game 4, when it may be staving off elimination. You know, I think I have as much confidence in him as I do just about anybody else, but that's maybe a low bar to clear. But I don't see any reason why he can't do it in the big-time situations.
Yeah, and we've seen in the past that you only need a starter to go 4 or 5 innings in a playoff game when it really counts, because you can ride that bullpen pretty hard, like we did in 2011.
Yeah, and if the reports of Trevor Rosenthal coming back are accurate, and I know he's coming back, but whether the reports of him actually being healthy and maybe looking more like the Rosenthal we saw last year, you do have the chance to have a really deep bullpen that you can get a guy starter out after the 4th inning if you need to, or after the 5th inning, or you could pinch hit when you need to because there's, you know, runners on and a pitcher coming up. You can turn to Bowman and Duke and and then Reyes and Rosenthal, Sechrist. Oh, I mean, that bullpen is strong enough, especially with days off. You can go to those guys and feel fairly confident. Now, some of those guys, you know, Bowman struggled at times this year, especially lately, and I think that's somewhat of usage, too. He's just not used to that. Duke, you just never know quite what you're going to get. It seems like he's almost a good here, bad there type of outings. But for the most part, those guys can go in and probably keep you in the ball game or keep you, you know, tied or, you know, with a one-run lead if you need them to. But then on the flip side of that, and we did see it right now, but, you know, will Mike Matheny manage like that? And that's always a kicker, too. We saw some positive thing tonight, you know, pulling Garcia so early. I'd like to think that he would take a page out of La Russa's 2011 book and do that, but you can't be 100% sure.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Rosenthal, because I know I've read John Nagel before saying move Rosenthal back to the rotation. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't care too much for that, and I mean, John's a smart guy, so I don't disagree with him very often, but my feeling generally is that Rosenthal is one, very, very valuable in the bullpen when he's healthy and when he's going right, but also he's what, 4 years probably removed from really being a starter, and it feels like to me that once you get into the bullpen for 2 or 3 years, you know, moving back is just difficult. We saw some of that with Brandon Looper way back in the day. We've seen it here and there, but I just don't think – I know he's got the pitches that maybe he could develop into that. But, you know, not only do I not see that – I mean, that's an off-season project, and you just kind of hope for next year. But, you know, there's like 10 starting pitchers in this organization that would probably get a look before he does. So I think he's much more valuable in the bullpen.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. The one thing I always think about is Daniel Bard with Boston, where he was a shutdown reliever for them, and then they moved him to the rotation. He's never been the same pitcher since.
And now he's in our organization. I don't remember exactly what level it is, but he's down at the minor somewhere.
Yeah.
Because you're right, he just was bouncing around. They just signed him as a minor league free agent. And to some degree, Gilbert Chamberlain had the same type of thing. You know, it's bouncing between the bullpen and the starting rotation is a difficult thing to do at times. Some people can do it, but not everybody.
So, what do we do with Adam Wainwright going forward?
Well, we temper our expectations, and we understand that Adam Wainwright is getting older, and that probably next year is the full torch pass of the ace status. And Wainwright's going to be a 2 or a 3 going into probably even into early next year. Wainwright's still got good stuff. When his curveball's working, he's effective. It seems like a lot this year when he's been getting lit up is when his curveball's hanging. He's not going to be Cy Young material again. And I know Adam Wainwright would come and fight me right now for saying that, because he's that kind of guy and he thinks that he can be a Cy Young. I think at 42, he would think he could be a Cy Young guy. But he's getting older in baseball age, and I just don't think that, you know, maybe we'll have another 2 or 3 good seasons out of him, but they won't be Adam Wainwright level seasons. I don't think we're going to see him, you know, really just dominating start after start. We're going to see a lot more of those 4 or 5 run starts kind of creeping up here and there. Getting past the 6th inning will probably start becoming, you know, a successful start. So, it's the way of baseball, and I think Adam Wainwright's here for the duration. Don't get me wrong, he's going to be a valuable part of this team for 17 and 18 and however long he wants to play, probably. But he's just not going to be the top guy going forward anymore, I don't think.
So is Carlos Martinez going to be that top guy?
At least right now, yeah. I think that's where the ace tag shifts. Martinez may not hold it as long, because it just depends on what Alex Reyes does develop into. You know, I think it's an interesting comment that if you follow him on Twitter, Bob Gibson's cousin, nephew maybe, I think maybe his nephew is on Twitter, and he made the comment that, you know, basically that's what Bob Gibson was when he came up, you know, throwing 99, walking the bases loaded and then striking out the side. You know, if Reyes can start to develop control and stuff, I think he gets that ace tag probably faster than we expect. But, you know, if you're going to shift, I think it's going to be Carlos Martinez. I mean, he's the only guy this year, especially, that has really shown that potential. And he's young. I mean, he's still developing and growing and maturing, if you will. That seems to be a buzzword around Carlos Martinez. But I just think that, yeah, probably, I don't know that he gets the opening day start next year, but in 2018 he will.
And so, finish out the rotation, where do you see Michael Wacha fitting in the future?
That's going to be really interesting. Because with Walker's injury, with that stress reaction, you know, developing maybe into a stress fracture at some point in time, it just doesn't seem like you can put Walker in the bullpen. Because I think he needs the days off between starts, and he needs to be able to do exercises. I just don't think you can make him into a bullpen guy for an entire season. Now, this year, you know, if he comes back here in the next week, he could add to the bullpen. Because, I mean, when we were talking about shortening games, you can throw a walk out there who can go probably two innings at least. Yeah, that helps a whole lot. So I think he has to be in the rotation if he's in St. Louis, and I don't think the Cardinals can trade him because he's injured damaged goods until he can establish himself again. So I think he has to be in the rotation. He's back at the back of it. He's probably the four with Leek the five. You know, I think they're just going to have to keep an eye on him and, you know, realize that there's going to be times where he's going to have to go on the DL, where you're really going to need six or seven pitchers in this organization, because there's going to be times where you're going to have Walker out for an extended period of time. And so if they're prepared for that, if they can work around that, Walker can still be effective. But he's, you know, I'm really afraid, and I hate to say it, but I think 2013 – and maybe the first half of 2014 is Michael Walker's peak. And it was a very high peak, a very great peak. But we may never see that again, which is sad because, you know, that was the first time we really saw him. And so that's our kind of our baseline expectation for him, and he's probably not going to reach that again.
Yeah, I definitely thought that was unrealistic expectations after how well he pitched, especially in the postseason. Was it 13 against the Pirates?
Yeah, 13 yeah. Pirates, and then, you know, he out-dueled Kershaw and the Dodgers. He finally had just like one bad outing against the Red Sox in the World Series. But, yeah, I mean, that was insane. And, I mean, the idea of Walker was always that he had a low ceiling but a high floor. He was going to get to what his level was very quickly, but he wasn't necessarily going to be a superstar. And I think he surpassed that a little bit in 13. And in 14, he had a really good run as well.
Yeah.
But with this injuries, I just don't know that he can ever get back to that on a consistent basis.
Well, yeah, because looking at Brandon McCarthy, I mean, he's battled this on and off for a few years, and he's had all kinds of other injuries. I don't know if it's maybe from altering mechanics or what, but it seems like something that's continually bothered him too.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, you do. You're just having those issues that build into that stress reaction. It's just something that's rare. It's something that people don't really know much about. But if it's how you're gripping your curveball or your changeup, and I mean, Walker's changeup is such a weapon, then that's difficult to say, hey, you have to relearn how to pitch. And if he does, even if he does do that, how effective can he be?
So if you're filling out the 2017 rotation, what do you have right now?
Well, I mean, you've got Martinez and Wainwright. Excuse me. And then you've got, you know, Walker and Leek. I mean, those are guys that almost have to be there. So you're really looking at that fifth, in the fifth spot of the numbers, but really probably your third spot in the rotation. And I think it's going to have to be, I really don't know that I want to see the Cardinals put, well, actually it has to be probably Lance Lynn, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
Because if he's ready to go at the beginning of the year, and it sounds like he will be because, you know, there was at least some halfway speculation that the Cardinals might use him in the bullpen, you know, this year. So I think he'll be ready for opening day, and obviously he's going to have some adjustments. We saw what Adam Wainwright does when he misses a year. But, you know, those are the five, because I don't see – you can't trade any of those guys. I mean, you really can't.
Yeah.
So unless you move Walker into the bullpen, there's no other way that rotation can really shake out. Now, that means you have Reyes probably in the bullpen to start the year. And then you have Luke Weaver in Memphis, which I don't have a problem with Luke Weaver spending a little bit more time in AAA because he only got one start down there. And even though he's done well at the big league level, get him ready. I mean, you're going to need that sixth starter at some point in time. But it's going to be frustrating, I think, a little bit to see Reyes in the bullpen for most of the year next year. Not that he doesn't need to work and doesn't need to kind of, you know, obviously he needs to work on his control and things of that nature. But, you know, that's not what we want to see. Even though if it's best for the team, that's not really what we want to see.
See, I wouldn't be surprised if he started out in Memphis just to stretch out since his innings have been restricted this year and to work on those control problems.
And that's a possibility, too. I think that's kind of what we saw with Shelby Miller, too, is like this idea that, oh, he's going to be in the starting rotation, and then, you know, he winds up in Memphis, even though we as fans expected that he would be ready to make that jump because he'd already spent some time there. It wouldn't be a bad thing. I mean, he does have options still, and he could obviously use some of that work. It probably will depend. I mean, the bullpen will still have a lot of guys to deal with, too. I mean, Duke is back for next year. You know, you got guys like Tyler Lyons that'll be back that have no options. And then you start looking at Marco Gonzalez and Tim Cooney, who are also out of options, as far as I know. I know Marco is. I'm pretty sure Tim Cooney is. You know, what do you do with those guys? And while John Mozeliak may make some trades in the offseason, with so many hurt guys, it's very difficult to think that he can do much more than just give those kind of players away.
Yeah, because Cooney and Gonzalez have no value right now.
No, none at all. I mean, it's just a lottery ticket to somebody. I mean, they might swap to a double A prospect, but low on their scale, really not more of a suspect than a prospect. But you couldn't bank on that. I mean, and Gonzalez especially, I think, could turn into something. You know, both of them probably could, given the hands that they throw with and the success they've had already. But, you know, odds are at least one of those guys is probably done. We just don't know which one yet until we get them out there in spring training and start seeing who really can come back from those injuries.
Yeah. All right, we'll jump back to this season real quick. What are your thoughts on the home record this year?
It's kind of mind-boggling to some degree. I mean, you know, if the Cardinals even play, you know, a smidgen over 500 at home this year or up to this point, you know, the Cubs are still winning the pennant race, but it's less than double digits, which would make, I think, most fans feel a little bit better, at least. You know, I think the best theory that I've heard and that kind of makes sense, because I kind of thought of it and then I started hearing people talk about it, was the fact that this team does seem to be built around the home run, and Busch Stadium has never been a home run ballpark. It's always played toward the pitchers. And without seeing, you know, spray charts and, you know, seeing how many balls are, you know, coming down at the warning track or, you know, that might be out of another ballpark, without doing all that, it feels like that maybe some innings are coming up short because of a fly ball out versus, you know, leaving the ballpark or becoming a double somewhere else. And that's, I mean, that's besides the just general randomness and flukiness of our home record, which in a season is fair. I mean, 81 games is not necessarily a huge sample, so these things can happen. I think if I was to look at anything, I would say, you know, probably that. But again, I'm not looking at the facts. You know, I think the last time I looked, they had more home runs on the road than at home, so maybe that ties in. I don't know, but that's my first guess would be that.
Man, if I had free time, I'd be looking into that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I did a little bit of digging, just not in that regard, but just on how reliant they are on home runs. And this was about a week or so ago, but, you know, I think it was 45% of their runs have scored via the home run, which is actually fourth or fifth in the major leagues. The Mets were about 55% at the time, and the Orioles were about 51%. So, you know, a lot of their runs do come from the long ball, so, you know, given the fact that Busch Stadium is typically played, you know, the park effects are, you know, what is it, like 102 is, you know, 100's even, so I think 102 would be like a pitcher's park, and that's the, or maybe it's the other way around, maybe it's 98 or 99 is the pitcher's park, but anyway, you know, it's not played at an extreme, it's not a Petco or anything, but it does seem to favor the pitchers, so, I mean, that's a guess, but that's, you know, just as good of a guess as anything else is maybe the, you know, maybe they got a new clubhouse guy that doesn't do the laundry right. I don't know.
The balls aren't stored properly.
That's right.
So, there's been talk of Matt Holliday coming back this year. What do you do with him for this year, and what are your expectations for next year? Do they pick up the option? Do they just let him walk?
It's, you know, this organization is not really tied to sentiment. So they could let Holliday walk. That said, I think they would prefer to try to figure out some deal that gets Holliday to retire as a Cardinal, whether it's taking the, I think it's $16 million or $17 million option.
And that's 17.
Yeah. And splitting it like over 2 years instead of just one. If it's, you know, something with deferred money, some way of, you know, not taking that huge hit next year, but also keeping him around. Because I don't think they want to see him go somewhere else. And I think Holliday still has some value. The question is going to be, you know, if you get Matt Holliday back, is he going to hit third next year or fourth next year automatically? And if that's the case, Matt Holliday probably doesn't need to be here. I think Matt Holliday can be very effective in the, you know, fifth, sixth hole, as we saw this year. He still has power. He can still hit the ball very hard. You know, maybe the first base transition needs to be a little bit more, you know, emphasized to give him that option to play some first base. You know, I think a lot of people are going to expect him to go to the American League where he could DH, and that may happen. But I feel like he's got a tie to the community. He, I think, has said he'd like to retire a Cardinal. I think the organization, if they can make it work financially, would probably try to accommodate that. But I don't see them picking up a $17 million option, especially, I mean, we'll see how he does in the next couple weeks if he does come back, but especially if for some reason he struggles or doesn't actually make it back. I can't see them picking that up based on what he was doing earlier. So, again, this organization has been known to let some people walk. Usually they make a pretty big stab at trying to keep them, but they have, you know, they do have their limits, and that may be it on Holliday's.
So if you have the one spot and it's down to Holliday and Brandon Moss, who do you take?
Well, I mean, in general, you'd say Brandon Moss. But I'm afraid that Brandon Moss is going to take, you know, a four-year, $80 million deal or something like that to get him signed. Something, you know, $17, $18, $19, $20 million probably. I mean, a qualifying offer, $16 million, you're probably going to try to sign him for a little bit more than that. And I don't know that I want Brandon Moss for 4 years at that rate. We've kind of seen, you know, what happens when he doesn't hit. We've seen that over this last few days, although thankfully not today. Today he seems to be coming out of it a little bit. You know, I don't know that I want him sitting on the books at $20 million, you know, 4 years from now when he's, I think, 35, 36 years old. I mean, he does have the power, and maybe that would translate, but it's kind of scary. But I think, I mean, if you get between that and then Matt Holliday, I think you probably do go with Moss. If it comes down to just one or the other, and it very well may.
Yeah, I'm a little torn on it because with Holliday, you'll probably get a little more average and a little less power. Mm-hmm. But if you're having one of them sit on the bench, you want that power when Moss comes up.
Yeah, I mean, Moss is probably more likely to be able to do it off the bench because he's done it before. You know, Holliday has, for the most part, been a starter, and he could, but you wouldn't necessarily bet on it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are ideas, there's options to get them both on the team, but it's going to take some work. It feels like, and I've said this before, I've said this a number of years, and it never pans out, but it feels like this is really a situation where John Mozeliak has to do some sort of trading this offseason to clear some room. Because there are so many, you know, outfielders and infielders and pitchers, and they're just crammed in to the point that even this 40-man roster seems kind of packed, much less when they have to play 25-man. It feels like John Mozeliak is going to have to do some clearing out of some of these assets, and I don't know which ones. I don't know how he does it. I don't know what he gets back, but it feels like he's going to have to do something to make this team a little bit different for next year.
Yeah, because right now you're sitting with Holliday, Moss, and Adams as your main options at first base. And you can't have all three of them next year.
Yeah, you can't have them all. And, you know, can you trade Matt Adams? Can you get anything for him? I mean, he's young, he's power, he's got power, but he's not consistent, and, you know, he doesn't – don't know that he's ever going to live up to his potential. You know, do you put – can you put an Adams and, you know, a Jaime Garcia, if you exercise his option, can you put those two together and get something? But then again, what do you get back? I mean, you're looking at probably just getting prospects back because there's not a hole on this team that has to be filled.
And even if you get prospects back, they're not going to be any high-level prospects for a guy like Adams.
No, I mean, you could, like I say, if you could put him and Garcia together, you could get, you know, especially if you're looking, you might be able to get a little bit higher quality, especially with Garcia. I mean, I know Garcia's had a rough couple months, but he's left-handed, he's young, and he's got very good stuff. I mean, he can be, and he's won a number of games in the big leagues. He, you know, he's going to be a guy that, especially if somebody thinks they can tweak him just a little bit, he can be dominant. So I think that somebody would be willing to pay not full value for him, don't get me wrong, but maybe a little bit more for somebody like him than maybe some of us would expect. And if you put him and an Adams together with some, you know, some potential, you're not going to get somebody's top, you know, in the top 10 of their prospects probably, but you might get something right outside of it.
Well, and you factor in Garcia's reasonably affordable. What is the option, like $11.5 million, I think?
I think it's $12 million with $500,000 buyout.
So yeah,
$11.5 million for the Cardinals to want to really exercise it.
I mean, that's a lot less than the going rate for a pitcher like that. So that would definitely be an option.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think that. Now, I will say, I thought this last offseason too, I thought Jaime Garcia had a whole lot more value last year, coming off a fairly strong season and with two option years. John Mozeliak didn't move him then, and, you know, for a while there this year, it looked like a good move. Now I think some of us are kind of wondering, but, you know, he's not going to get as much this year as he could have gotten out of him last year, but he can still get something.
Yeah, and I think last year you didn't know what you really had in the rotation, because people still question Waka's health, and then you brought Leak in, and then Lance Lynn went down, so keeping Garcia was probably the right move at the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, I get why he did it, and I don't argue that. It's just that I feel like at times John Mozeliak is just a little more conservative than he has to be on things, and I say that as a fairly conservative person myself. I just feel like there are times where you maybe take that gamble and trade off of Garcia and hope that, you know, at the time you had a Tyler Lyons that could pitch in the you know, fifth spot with fairly reasonable idea. You had, you know, you thought at least you probably had Marco Gonzalez or Tim Cooney. You know, obviously the depth issue has reared its head, so it makes sense to keep him. But it just felt like, you know, take your chance, take a stab. And maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't get the you know, chopped him around and he didn't get the response that he liked. But if you could bring back a fairly good prospect at that time, you know, maybe you make that deal with the idea that you're not really damaging this team. You're weakening it some, but hopefully it wouldn't matter. Now, it looks like it would happen. It looks like John Mozeliak probably did make the right choice. But at the time, it felt to me like that was, you know, maybe a bit of a bold move that he could have made, but that's not really in his repertoire at times.
So I know Mike Matheny is a polarizing topic with Cardinal fans. Where do you stand on him?
Mike, you're right. He's very polarizing. Everybody has got their opinions on Mike. I think Mike is better than he was when the organization hired him 5 years ago. I think that he has learned some things. I don't think a Mike Matheny 5 years ago would have even dreamed of taking out Garcia tonight. I mean, he just would not have even thought of it. I think that he bunts a lot less than he did. He still has it occasionally in there. And obviously, I mean, it feels like, except for the Colton Wong situation, he's still his strong suit of leader of men, if you will, still seems to be accurate. You know, I think the Colton Wong situation may have put a little bit of a cracks in that, just because Wong went public with some of that stuff. But he still, for the most part, seems to be a guy that everybody seems to, you know, respect and play hard for and things of that nature. You know, that said, the lineups are still kind of questionable. You know, we still feel like Matheny's guys. You know, I'm not nearly as negative on him as some people are. And I don't know that another manager would have made a whole lot of difference in this season. So, you know, I'm not calling for his job. Let's put it that way. If the Cardinals made a change at manager, it probably wouldn't bother me, but I don't think they have to.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. His bullpen usage drives me nuts. There's a lot of games that he's really bugged me with how he uses his pitchers. But really,
yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest gripe I have. I mean, the players love him from what I've heard.
It seems to. I mean, we don't hear a thing about him in the big league. I mean, you don't hear a negative word about him. I mean, even the few times, you know, even Colton Long, when he was in here talking to Rob Raines, still said, you know, he had nothing but respect for Mike Matheny and just was frustrated with the situation, even though he knew and understood what was going on. So, yeah, it seems like everybody, you know, really appreciates him, really likes him. You know, but that said, you know, there's some idea, and I've seen it floated around, I'm not sure exactly where, but some idea that, you know, he was a little bit too close to some of these guys. I mean, he played with some of these guys. He played with Yadier Molina.
Yeah.
He played, you know, at the same time with that of Adam Wainwright. I mean, and so with those guys are maybe more likely to be able to, you know, press on that friendship. And I don't say that in a negative way, but if Yadier Molina says he wants to play, it becomes more difficult for Mike Matheny to say, no, you're not. You know, this is like the fifth consecutive year that Yadier Molina was supposed to get more rest, and the fifth consecutive year he set like a, you know, over 1,000 innings of catching. So I think that he, you know, he knows that he can kind of, you know, maybe press that and say, oh, I'm fine, Mike let me in there. And Mike doesn't necessarily feel, you know, that's more of a peer relationship than a boss-subordinate relationship, perhaps. And then, again, that's us reading stuff into what we see, and it very well may not be like that, but that's what it kind of feels like. And that kind of leads you into the Matheny's guys type of, you know, categories and stuff like that. So he does have some work to do, but he's, you know, again, he has had no experience, and so he's learning on the biggest stage. And, you know, John Mozeliak still seems to be very fond of him, you know, and I don't think he's going anywhere. So pretty much everybody just needs to figure out how to like him, I guess, because they're not going to, you know, you're going to have a lot of angst next year, too.
Yeah, and you brought up something I like to point out to people is he's never managed before, so these mistakes are usually on the minor league level, and people don't see him.
Yeah. And I think that that's added to, I kind of wrote a little bit about it this morning, but, you know, like Joe Maddon yesterday put Ben Zobrist in the cleanup spot, even though Zobrist was hitting, like, in a huge slump, kind of like a Moss-like slump. And when we see Moss in the cleanup spot when he's 1-for-42, then we're complaining about Matheny and what's, you know, what is this idiot doing and stuff like that. And, you know, Joe Maddon, because he has been in the major leagues, because he has, you know, shown that he knows what he's doing, and because he has this reputation of being smart, if nothing else, you know, his decisions probably aren't nearly as questioned as by the Cubs fans as Matheny's are with the Cardinal fans, just because, mainly because of that experience, even though they're doing the same thing. So, you know, if Matheny's still here in 5 years and doing things, will we start to give him a little bit more credit because it's worked for him in the past? I don't know. I don't know if he's ever going to get that benefit of the doubt just because of how he's come into this situation. But you follow a legend, that's always a dangerous thing to do as well.
Especially when you seem to manage in the same manner that the legend does, and it doesn't always work out the same way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he does seem try. It's almost, I mean, of course, his critics would say that it's like a, you know, a preschooler trying to imitate their father, that kind of thing, you know, that they'll, you know, go through some of the similar motions, but the results are not going to be nearly the same. And I don't think that that's, you know, true, but there is some of that. It's some of that, I think, especially in the first couple of years, he probably did moves because he thought that's what moves needed to be done. You needed to bunt runners over, you know, no matter what the situation was. You needed to stay with these same 7, 8, 9, you know,
yeah,
bullpen guys.
Or pull the double switch when you didn't really have to.
Yeah, and I think the double switch thing is still dangerous. I mean, it still feels like something that he doesn't have quite a handle on, because he feels like he needs to double switch, you know, when he has to. And I mean, you know, like recently he double switched out, you know, Matt Adams for Matt Bowman. I'm like, you know, at worst your pitcher's going to hit second the next inning. You've got a lead. You know, why take out your cleanup hitter in that situation? And I don't think he's quite got that feel down for that yet. But yeah, you're right. I think that's the biggest, probably that may be his biggest drawback right now. It's just he had almost a pathological need to double switch.
Yeah. So if he stays, does management need to come in and say, we need to change some coaches?
Well, you know, going into this year, we would have said John Mabry needs to go. And now everybody hits home runs, and so nobody talks about John Mabry anymore. I don't know. I kind of wanted him to do a more experienced bench coach, but I don't think that's going to make any difference now. I mean, unless David Bell gets an opportunity to manage somewhere, I expect that they're going to keep the coaches the same for the most part. And I don't know that that's. I'm still not 100% sure, and you really can't tell. But I don't know how much coaches and managers really make an impact on the big league level. I mean, you know, maybe one game. Maybe two games here and there that they really decide. But for the most part, it's the players going through there and making those decisions work or not work. And the coaching staff, they can find something. But a lot of these guys, they know their swing. They know things here and there. They do help. But how much is, you know, the difference between a John Mabry and another hitting coach? You know, could you tell the difference if you had the same personnel? I don't know.
And it's funny you mentioned that. I was just listening to a podcast from The Ringer, their MLB show, and they were talking to Cole Figueroa about a month ago. He's a minor leaguer, but he was talking about how the hitting coach is more there as a motivational guy rather than a fundamental guy.
And I find that interesting. In the minor league level, you would think it would be more instructional. But at the big league level, yeah, especially, I think that there's, you know, it's another set of eyes. It's a guy that can say, watch video with you and say, hey, look here or look there. But, yeah, it's more of, hey, you know, keep your head up here. This is, you know, you've hit this guy before, you know, that kind of thing. I can see that. And if that's the case, especially at the managerial level, I mean, obviously that's something that Mike Vini excels at. And you would think his coaching staff probably does too.
Yeah. I guess my biggest issue with Mabry is every offense we've had under him has been one-dimensional. So one year it's they hit well with runners in scoring position. The next year it's on-base percentage. And then this year it's power. So it never seems like he gets a full team together.
Yeah, and that's fair. Now, of course, lots of people would still rather see not the running Redbirds, but something more approximating it, some a little bit more action on the base paths.
Especially with the speed you have. Hmm? Especially with the speed that's on the team.
Yeah, and that may be, maybe that's a slow idea of coming around to realizing what kind of speed you have. Because when Matheny took this team over, he really didn't have a whole lot of speed. Now there's more of it there. But, you know, that said, baseball doesn't run as much as it used to. I mean, the Orioles, I think, have, you know, 17 or 18 steals on the year. The Cardinals aren't much better than that, and they probably should be. But, you know, we've seen this team. This team's not really a good base-running team. Do we really want them stealing bases? I mean, I think that's a question to be asked, because it seems like they tend to steal bases maybe at the wrong times, too. You know, and I think base-running is something that, overall, I would hope would be addressed in spring training, because it really seemed to have taken a step back this year. And whether, you know, I hate to think that it's all because Jose Aquindo's not there to hold whatever fragile magic together, but maybe he had an impact more than we thought.
Yeah, I definitely think that ties into it somehow, especially with as bad as the defense has been this year. I mean, one thing he's always done is worked with guys.
Yeah. And I get, but part of me thinks that, you know, these are a lot, except for Diaz, who did struggle, and that could have easily helped Diaz in that regard. You know, a lot of these, all these guys, for the most part, were back. I mean, these are guys that had worked with Aquindo for so long that he could help them during the year, but you'd think they would have known their lessons, I guess is what I was trying to say. And you wouldn't have expected them to just fall apart because he's not there. Now, maybe, you know, I don't know if Oquindo was dealing with positioning and things like that. I don't think he probably was, but maybe he had some impact on where people are going, you know, where people are standing, and, you know, a step in the right direction could be the difference between an error and an out. So I don't know.
It makes me wonder, too, if he worked with younger coaches. Like, I know Lilquist worked with Duncan a little bit before he left. So I'm wondering if Oquindo worked with other coaches to kind of explain what he did.
That's interesting. I don't know. Especially given the fact, you know, Duncan, of course, thought he was going to be here, and then with his wife's illness and then passing, he decided he retired, or at least from us. So he had the opportunity to do that because he knew that he was going. You know, Oquindo, really didn't know that he was going to be out for the year until he had that knee surgery in spring training. And so he may not have had that thought to pass it along. Now, I got to figure that Jose Oquindo is still involved with this organization. I don't figure he just went home.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, even if he's there, you know, I'm sure he's texting these guys or he's talking to these guys, even if he's not there every day. So you'd like to think that some of that's minimized just because he can say, hey, you need to be doing this, or I've seen this, you know, I would hope so. But then again, we don't hear a lot of his name. And some of that's out of sight, out of mind, but you'd kind of maybe think at some point in time, just in passing, some sort of mention of Oquindo would have happened. But, you know, pretty much from spring training on, the only mention's been from the fans wondering, you know, if he was the missing link for this team.
Yeah. There you have it. You can find Daniel on the Cards Conclave, CardsConclave.com. He's on Twitter at C70. I list his podcast in our show notes here. For Nerdcast, you can find us at our website. It's nerdcast.com, NYRDCAST. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Nerdcast. Again, it's NYRDCAST. We're also on Facebook. Google it. We're part of the Inside Joke, Outside Voice podcast network. Find more great podcasts at OE.net. This is an old friend with their song Fragments and Blurs.